is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Lionel Garrett from Wilberforce University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel.
I feel like I've heard that tonight, Mike.
You have heard it now. So it is past 12:30 on Tuesday evening / Wednesday morning. We have just watched the Phoenix Suns defeat the Los Angeles Clippers, and we have just battled through some technology issues.
Hopefully.
And we are ready to talk about the Phoenix Suns win over the Clippers on the last second lob to DeAndre Ayton, among many other interesting things that happened in the last minute or two of that game.
Oh, like Paul George missing free throws, or like Pep Beverly acting like he got shot when he got hit in the face with
that was a total elbow. Flop, right?
Yeah, totally. It was totally a flop. So who knows? Mike, we have successfully made it past the 41-second mark. So
all right, we are on our way.
We're on our way to a good podcast. Anyways, so things that I want to take away from this. Once again, great out of bounds play. A lot of people we talked beforehand not understanding the rules of if an inbounds play, there's no such thing as a goaltend. Primarily, I think the reason for that is you can't make a shot from out of bounds. So it's pretty cool to see him employ the play, that worked. That's the first thing I take away. The second thing, Pandemic P struck again, missing those free throws, and just a heck of a game. It was a gritty game. It was a good. It was probably one of the better games we've had so far, and I don't think there's much you can ask for. Both teams are missing a very key player in Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard, but they gutted it out. They played, it wasn't the best. I wouldn't say the most fundamentally sound game, but it was a pretty enjoyable game to watch and kind of stick with all the way through. What do you think, Mike?
Well, we haven't had a ton of games that have been close in the playoffs. We've had a lot of games that have been blowouts. We've had a lot of series that have been interesting because of the shifts from game to game. But as far as compelling games that have come down to the last few possessions, I don't feel like we've had a ton of those games. Obviously, this was one, and we'll talk a little bit later about Nets-Bucks game 7, but
otherwise, I feel like we've had a lot of games that have been blowouts. And so this game was fun to watch because it just came down to the very end. You think about that out of bounds play, and there just had, there were so many pieces of that that had to go perfect in order for it to happen. So Crowder's got to put the ball, one, in the right spot where Ayton can get it. But even more importantly than that, the timing of making sure that the ball and Ayton arrive there at the same time, because Booker had to set a great screen on Zubac, and then Zubac, to his credit, continued to fight through. Batum couldn't really leave Devin Booker because he didn't want Booker to pop out and get the shot. So you had to be able to figure out what's that timing. If you're Jay Crowder standing there on the side, inbounding the ball, you don't know how long is Ayton going to get hung up on that screen. Is he going to be able to come off it clean? What's it going to look like? And I guess ultimately it doesn't matter because Crowder just has to put the ball where he puts it, and either Ayton's there or he's not. And there's only 0.9 seconds to go. So if it doesn't work, you know, it doesn't really, whatever. It just, you know, you move on and you lose the game. But there wasn't much that, there wasn't much you could really do, I guess, differently, but the timing of everything that had to work in order for that play to be successful, it was really well executed by the Suns without question.
Yep. I agree. And the other thing we have to look at too, Mike, is, you know, Devin Booker setting that screen after he literally had to get stitches, which I thought was crazy. Like, I understand that there was contact, but I don't necessarily know that I agree with that should have been a foul. What do you think, Mike?
I mean, theoretically, it's probably not a foul. I mean, two guys are just kind of going at each other, and instead of bumping shoulders, they end up bumping faces, and both guys go down. I don't have a big problem with it being a foul. I mean, it would have been obviously a problem if they called it some kind of flagrant foul, which it clearly wasn't. It was clearly accidental. But both guys go down. I don't have a huge problem with being with it being a foul. I think there were two other plays between Booker and Beverly that were even more interesting than that play. The one where Booker was driving and put his hand up, and it clearly looked like his hand or his arm made contact with Beverly. But then it was like a second later when Beverly did the exaggerated throwback of his head. I know Beverly was showing that he was bleeding after the play, and I think he did get hit. But then I think he, in a tape delay sense, ended up selling the call. But he didn't sell it with the right timing, so it clearly looked off. When you're watching, you're like, okay, it looks like there was contact. But then his head didn't snap back for like a second later. So that was weird. And then the other play, which we heard Jeff Van Gundy ranting about, is the one where Beverly poked it out of bounds and it went off Booker's hand, or Booker's hand was the last to touch it. And I think Jeff Van Gundy's 100% right when he was saying that, look, whatever, it may have been off Booker. Booker may have been the last one to touch it, but clearly Beverly is the guy poking the ball away from Booker. Like, I can never, ever, ever think of a time in a game of basketball where somebody's dribbling and the ball gets poked away by someone and it's called off the dribbler. Now, again, if we could look at everything in super slow motion, maybe that's always the correct call, but it didn't seem like it should have been the correct call. It should have been Suns' ball.
I think the point that I saw, at least that was being made on Twitter, was like, you're not doing this on every single out-of-bounds play throughout the whole rest of the game. Why are the last 2 minutes any different? And I understand that's not the intention of the rule. The intention of the rule for this review stuff has to be adjusted. Like, I really think I understand the point of why the last 2 minutes is important to do these things. But when it comes down to it, when it's if it's a 50-50 call, then I understand it. Like, but that call should have never even been gone to the review. The only reason they did it was because people were going crazy. Review it, throwing their finger in the air. Like, they've got
to. But once you look at it, you have to go with what you see. And
exactly,
it was clear. Like, it wasn't even. I mean, honestly, it wasn't even close. I mean, clearly, Booker's hand was the last hand on the ball, and it wasn't even. And that wasn't even remotely. Wasn't even remotely debatable, and yet, just like Van Gundy was saying on the broadcast, it just doesn't seem right based on the way we've watched basketball and played basketball for our entire lives. It just didn't seem like it
fit. So you're saying you finally agree with Jeff Van Gundy, Mike?
I agree with Jeff Van Gundy on this one for sure. But I don't know how you fix, once you have replay, I don't know how you cannot look at plays like that. You have to look at them. If you're going to have replay at all, then those are the kind of plays that replay is there for, where you can make a definitive decision. And look, it slowed down the last 2 minutes of the game, which had, what, I don't know, four or five reviews. And it just, it makes the game drag. It's not nearly as interesting as if you just kept the game moving. But I don't have a huge problem with it. Either you have to do away with replay, or you have to use replay to get the calls, quote, right, even though the spirit of maybe this call was wrong. I don't know. I still lean towards replay. I think about it if I'm a player or I'm a coach and there's an egregious error that an official makes, which, again, is entirely possible. They're human. If I can't go back and get that fixed, that's devastating. And maybe I have to live with some of these annoying little delays and strange calls and things. But if they can get the biggest calls right, to me, I still think it's probably worth it. Yep.
Okay, fair. All fair points. I just don't think there's not a good answer to it, I don't think, really.
I think it's either, again, you got to get rid of it altogether, and you just say, hey, we live with the human beings making the call, just like players and coaches make mistakes, officials make mistakes, we live with it, and you move on. And that's how we watch professional sports on all levels for, I don't know, me, probably for the first 30 years of my life or so. And Or you got to do this. You know, you got to put up with some delays. You got to put up with some strange calls. But ultimately, you'll probably end up getting more calls right by having the replay. But does it delay the game and have a negative effect on the flow and the experience of watching the game, whether it's in the arena or on the, you know, at home? Sure, absolutely, it has a negative effect.
Yep. All right. So I guess at this point, Mike, let's talk about the rest of the series, what we think. And I think it's really hard for us to make a prediction, and, you know, on how this series is going to unfold because of all the murky circumstances behind Paul and Kawhi Leonard. But I'm going to just say, I think the Suns win this series. I don't know how many games it's going to go, but I think the Suns win this series because I can't envision the Clippers winning this series.
Well, this was a key game. I mean, if the Clippers get this one, then it's 1-1. They split in Phoenix, you're going back home to Los Angeles. I think you look a lot better. I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't heard. What's Chris Paul's status? When's he supposed to be back? I mean, have they made a definitive announcement of when he's going to be able to come back?
Who, Chris Paul?
Yeah.
No, they haven't said anything.
Okay, so who knows when he's coming back? Kawhi, do you believe he's coming back at all in this series?
No.
I don't think he's going to play again in this series. Now, maybe he's not completely out if they somehow make the NBA Finals, but I don't think Kawhi is playing in this series. And as a result of that, plus the fact that Phoenix is already up 2-0, I agree with you. I think Phoenix is going to close this out. I could see them splitting in LA and then coming back home and winning it in Game 5 if Kawhi stays out. Now, if Kawhi comes back, maybe it's a different story.
Yeah, but what kind of condition is he going to be? What kind of condition is he going to be in? I don't know.
You'd still rather have Kawhi at 75% than some of the guys that the Clippers are running out there. It still comes down to me.
Hey, my favorite sports talk take was Skip Bayless. Did you see the Skip Bayless rant?
No.
Bayless was talking to Shannon Sharp, and he said, you know, if Marcus Morris can't play tonight, I don't have faith in the Clippers because they just go as he goes. And I just stared at this TV screen or my phone screen thing. If the Clippers are relying on Marcus Morris, Skip Bayless. I'll see if I can find it for you.
Send that to me because Skip, boy, that's one of the most horrendous takes I've ever heard. Because if Marcus Morris is your bellwether, well, look, I said it when they signed him that precluded them from winning a title. That when he signed the 4-year, whatever $64 million contract that he signed prior to last season, that was pretty much the death knell for the Clippers. For the Clippers' chances to win a title. Look, I still think if you look at, and I think Simmons said it on his podcast, the Sunday night one with Russillo, that he still thinks that the Clippers are the more talented team, or that the Clippers have a really talented roster. And I'm sorry, like I look at the Clippers roster, and I'm like, where? Like, where's the great talent? Marcus Morris, is he a great talent? I don't think so. Zubac, is he a great talent? I don't think so. Reggie Jackson. I mean, Reggie Jackson's been playing really well, don't get me wrong, but is Reggie Jackson, who couldn't make it in Oklahoma City, couldn't make it in Detroit, I mean, is he a super talented guy? I'm not sure. Patrick Beverley, he's playing 26 minutes. Is he a super talented guy? People had given up Nick Batum for dead. You know, Boogie, Rondo at this point in his career, Luke Kennard. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't see this top to bottom super team full of players that every other team in the league is just salivating to try to get their hands on. I don't see it. I mean, I just don't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at Phoenix's roster, and I mean, Ayton, Booker, and Bridges are three guys that, I mean, any team in the league would clearly want those guys and have a space for them to play. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And on the Clippers, I don't know, other than Paul George, would anybody else on the Clippers be a guy that you would automatically pencil in as a starter no matter where they went in the league? I don't think so. I don't think so. So I don't know. I think the Suns are more talented. I think Ayton has been a revelation in this playoff. He's played really, really, really well. I know there's been a lot of talk now about, you look at that draft and Ayton goes one, and then you have Bagley, unfortunately, goes to the Kings, and then you have Trey and Luka with the trade, and now Trae Young's in the Eastern Conference Finals, DeAndre Ayton's in the Western Conference Finals, Luka's yet to get out of the first round. And that's not to say that DeAndre Ayton and Trae Young are better than Luka, because that's not true, but it is interesting that those two guys, who clearly most people thought and probably still think that it's a mistake that Luka didn't go number one, but yet these guys are having a huge, huge impact on the 2021 NBA playoffs, and both are playing at a really, really high level. Will they ever get to the level that Luka is? I don't know, but they're playing really, really well. I mean, Ayton tonight goes for 24 and 14, and we know what Trae Young's been doing over in the East. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but both these guys are having great playoff series, and it looks like they're going to be part of the NBA landscape, a key part of it for years and years to come. Both of them look like they're built for the moment. Neither one of them has shrunk in the playoffs, and in fact, both of them have expanded their game and played even better in the playoffs than they did in the regular season. So it's got to make you feel a little bit better if you're a Hawks fan or a Suns fan, that even though it was probably a mistake not to take Luka, it's not looking like a mistake of a 10 times over mistake. It's maybe, you know, one time over or two time over. These guys are both going to be really good players and probably all-star players for many years to come.
Yep. All right. I found it, Mike. You ready? I'll play just a snippet of this. Hold on. Skip Bayless on Undisputed. Ready?
I'm ready.
My remarks with this. If Marcus Morris Sr. is out tonight, then I'm out on the Clippers.
What if he's hobbled?
I don't even know if he's going to be able to go at all, because they said he's more of a game time decision.
Skip, I thought it's because I was watching it and I saw the little subtitles. They was talking about he might take an injection in the knee during the game, because he didn't come out because they started.
Hold on.
They started Batum, didn't he? When he started somebody.
No, he started.
He's not the second half.
Oh, the second half.
Right, right, because he didn't come out.
He couldn't come in, but he tried to come in for a little while and couldn't go.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on. I got my sources on Kawhi, but I don't have them on Marcus Morris, so I don't know.
Okay.
So my point is, I've told you all year, weirdly, almost inexplicably, this team goes as he goes. Right? he's the catalyst.
He's the new heartbeat. He's the new pulse of the team, Skip.
What's that?
He's the new pulse of the heartbeat of the team.
Because he's a baller, man, and he's been there and done all that. And
okay, there you go.
Done all what?
Yes. He's a mentally tough guy.
He's a mentally tough guy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That's what people are watching on TV.
What is Skip Bayless talking? What is he talking about? What is he talking about? Oh, that's horrendous. So, look, if that turns out to be 5% true, then the Clippers might as well pack it in now. If you're counting on Marcus Morris to be your guiding light in the storm, then it's just not going to happen for
you. Okay.
Sorry.
Well, Mike, I think on that note, I think you need a break. So we're going to take a break and hear a word from our sponsors.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
All right, we're back. The other event that happened tonight was the draft lottery, and Mike, the Cavs jumped up. They had the number 3 pick. That's exciting, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I think what it does is, clearly, barring something completely unforeseen between now and the draft, Cade Cunningham's going to be headed to Detroit. And from everything that I've read and seen, it looks like that the next 2 picks will probably be Evan Mobley and Jalen Green. And I'd be excited to get either one of them. Personally, I'd probably prefer Jalen Green simply because I think that wing type scorer is the type of guy that you want to be able to build around. I'm still not convinced that a big guy is the direction 100% that I'd want to go. But I do like what Mobley can give you out on the floor. I think he's mobile. I think he can block shots. I think he has a good touch as a passer. But I personally would rather have the guy who can go get me buckets. And you don't win in this league without guys that can score in isolation and score in big moments, especially when we start talking playoff basketball. So to me, if I had to think of which guy was more likely to turn into a star, even a superstar, I think Jalen Green probably has the higher upside than Mobley. But if it ends up that the Cavs draft Mobley, I'd be okay with that too, especially when you start thinking about the guys that we already have here in Cleveland. But yeah, definitely good that they moved up.
Yeah,
would have loved to see them. Would have loved to see them get up to one.
Were you watching the draft lottery?
I did not watch it. I was at my son's game.
So Woj said during it that if the Cavs get a high pick, don't be surprised if they look to move it and make a big move. And I'm like, what in God's green earth is he even talking about? Like, and he specifically called out the Cavs.
Ben Simmons.
Oh God, bless America.
Sexton and the number 3 pick for Simmons. Book it.
Would you do it? Would you do it, Mike? I think no. My answer is no.
Yeah, I think the answer is no. Like, look, is Ben Simmons as bad as he was in this series? I don't think he's that bad. I think there's something. But I can be honest, when you lose it mentally, the way he clearly lost it mentally, at least at the free throw line. And what happened to him is he got so psyched out at the free throw line that he then became like, he was already afraid to shoot jump shots, right? So he hasn't shot jump shots for 2 seasons. So for whatever reason, he doesn't want to do that. And then once this free throw line thing became completely in his head, it was like he was afraid to shoot at all because he just didn't want to have to go up to the line. And once you get like that, I mean, it's just really hard to play. Can you recover from it? Yeah, you can recover from it. But in the highest leverage moments, I think it's always going to be there in the back of your head. And it takes a lot of mental strength to be able to overcome that. And personally, I'd rather take the unknown potential of the 3rd pick rather than take Ben Simmons. And if you're not going Ben Simmons, I mean, maybe Woj obviously knows something that we don't know, but I don't know who's out there, what team is out there looking to deal a guy that would be worth giving up the 3rd pick in the draft. I don't know who that guy is or who the Cavs would be targeting. But, I mean, certainly, let's put it this way. If you were to package either Sexton or Garland and that number 3 pick, you would think that that could get you a pretty good player in return. I mean, you would be talking getting an all-star level player for those two assets for sure.
Yep, I would agree. I agree with that. I think
Bradley Beal.
What was that? Oh, come on.
Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal's not leaving Washington.
Lillard.
He's not. They're not trading him to Cleveland. Come on. All right, that's enough. We've got time to talk about the draft. We don't need to spend time about that. But I think now it's time to transition to the Eastern Conference, Mike. I don't know how. I guess let's attack this first by talking about. We've already talked about Ben Simmons, so let's talk about that series first. Then we'll talk about the Milwaukee Nets series, and then after we do that, we'll just kind of make predictions. We don't need to spend a lot of time on the actual series because nothing's happened yet, but we can kind of talk about what we think is going to happen. So first, Sixers Hawks. Listen, I think you and I doubted Trae Young, and this is a time of this isn't the first time that we're kind of having a mea culpa on this, but give credit where credit's due. The Hawks just played better. I just trusted the Hawks more. They played really well. Ben Simmons was atrocious. I think there's zero chance that Ben Simmons is on this team next year.
That's not how the Sixers are talking today, though.
It's because their trade value will plummet if they say they're going to trade him.
Right, I understand, but I'm just saying they're talking a big game today. Daryl Morey said that there's 26 other teams that would like to be where the Sixers are, and Doc said, "Hey, we got a plan to reclimate, a reclamation project here with Ben Simmons. We got a plan." Yeah, I think it's all a smokescreen.
Yeah, and there was also some things that were coming out that Ben Simmons isn't a hard worker. Ben Simmons doesn't work hard. Doesn't listen to anyone's advice, and the only people he has around him are all family members or friends. And I don't know if that's true or not. I don't even remember where I saw that. It came out of ESPN Philly or someone reporting that. Listen, I think there's zero chance. I mean, Mike, I'm willing to make a bet with you on this that there's zero chance that he's a 76er if you're willing to take me up on it.
Yeah, I don't want to take that bet. I don't like my odds there.
Okay. So, credit where credit's due. Congrats to the Hawks. I don't really have anything else to say. I enjoy watching the Hawks play, and I'm excited to see how they match up against Milwaukee. And, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I've hit all the points that I want to hit. Embiid played really well. You got to give him credit on playing on a torn meniscus. He played as well. He gutted it out there. He played as well as he could. And you could definitely tell in the second half of games he was not the same player as he was in the first half because it was just wear and tear on that knee. But I give him credit for gutting it out there and playing. And that's all I'm going to say on the series. You have anything you want to add, Mike?
Yeah, one more thing. Well, actually two more. So the problem with Philadelphia is their offense, their creator is a 7'3", 290-pound guy. That's the only guy when Simmons isn't rolling that can create offense. And so you watch them in the fourth quarter of these last three games of the Hawks series and nobody can create anything. And so the offense becomes Embiid catching the ball at the elbow or at the top of the key. And then him having to go one-on-one. And if he's creating a shot for somebody else or for himself, that's the offense. And when you have a guy that's that big, that does what he does defensively, that has his, let's just be gentle here and say he has some conditioning issues and he's already dealing with the torn meniscus and we know that he has a propensity to get hurt, to put that much of a burden on him to not only generate offense for himself, but he's basically generating offense for that entire team when Simmons isn't on the floor or when Simmons is being compromised like he is a lot of times during this playoffs. It just can't happen. And then to compound that, you have Tobias Harris, who's making a lot of money. And look, Tobias Harris is a good player. Tobias Harris did not play well in this series. He certainly didn't shoot it well. And he's not a creator. And he is probably more suited to the role that he had back when Jimmy Butler was on the Sixers, where you have Butler, you have an extra creator. Even if Simmons is that extra creator, right? So Simmons is guy creating and Tobias Harris is the third wheel. But when Tobias Harris is your second guy, I don't think that's really where you want to be. And that's how Philly ended this series against Atlanta. And they were asking too much of Embiid, not so much as a scorer, but he was having to create offense for the other guys on that team, and that just making it almost impossible. And so Philly, I think, I mean, we've said it a bunch of times, I just don't know what they do. I just don't know what they do with Ben Simmons. I don't know what the trade options are. I don't know what his value is. I think it's now to the case where those two guys, you can't keep them together. I think even if Simmons is playing well, I think it's difficult. And if you're Philly and you look at, you've gone through the entire process and the best you've done is the second round of the playoffs, and now you're probably going to trade away one of those guys that was the centerpiece of the process, and you're going to be left basically with Embiid and not a whole lot to show for it, and the risk that Embiid is going to continue to do what he's done, which is be injured or have conditioning issues. And look, he was great this year, but long-term, does Joel Embiid have 10 more years of high-level play? I would not be willing to bet my life for my NBA franchise on that. So Philly's in a tough spot, and they're going to have a lot of changes to make, I think, this offseason. They're going to come back next fall, I think, looking a lot different than they do now. And then on the other side, Atlanta, I mean, you said it about Trae Young. You and I talked about it kind of throughout this season, and we've talked about it in years past, that when you have a little guy like that, and it seemed like Trae Young was more focused on Trae Young and accumulating stats and putting up shots rather than worry about winning. But I think he's proven in these first two series that, man, he's a tough guy. I mean, he's really a tough guy, both tough physically, tough mentally. I mean, there was no doubt that when you watched him, it didn't matter if he missed three shots in a row or made five shots in a row, whatever it was, he always looked like he was ready to make the next play. And it started back from that game against the Knicks where I texted you before the play went down when he made the game-winning shot. I said, Trae Young's going to make this shot. And there was just something about watching him in that game. And then he's proven it time and time again now over the last two, you know, over these last two series, that he has a confidence about him. Regardless of how things are going, he just exudes a confidence that he's going to be able to do what he wants to do. And that bodes well for Atlanta in the future. Now, whether or not they can beat the Bucks, I don't know. But certainly when you look at, can you build a great team around Trae Young? I think that question to some degree has been answered. And the answer to that question is yes. So kudos to Trae Young. And then on the other hand, you've got the rest of the guys of Atlanta. I mean, Herter has a huge game in game 7. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Played really well. Look, you can say, oh, that's a fluke, but it's not too often that guys in Game 7 come up with big games who aren't legitimate, quality NBA players. And Herter played tremendously, shot the ball really well, and carried him in moments when Trae wasn't shooting the ball as well as probably the Hawks would have liked him to have done. So the Hawks, I think, look, it's a surprise. A lot of people picked them to lose to the Knicks. A lot of people, I'm sure, had them losing to the 76ers, and most people are going to pick the Bucks to beat the Hawks. But I don't know. This team looks tough. They didn't back down from Philly at all. I really liked the way John Collins played in that series. I thought when he was battling against Embiid, like he looked like, I mean, Embiid's a giant human being. And when John Collins, who was like 6'10", 230, was going against him, Collins looks like a teeny tiny little guy, but he never backed down. He kept coming at him. And I felt like everybody on that Atlanta roster, everybody who played, just looked like they weren't afraid. They looked like they were ready to go at it. And conversely, Philly got tight and looked shaky. And I just never felt like Atlanta looked shaky. And whether you attribute that to completely to the Hawks or to some degree Philly's issues, I don't know. But to win two games on the opponent's home floor, I guess they won 3 in the series. It's a pretty good accomplishment for Atlanta. And I don't know. Yeah. I guess we'll see what they do against Milwaukee. So,
all right.
Let's talk some Bucks next.
This is your crowning happiest moment of the playoffs so far. The Nets losing, I think. Before we bury the Nets, I want to say Kevin Durant, I'm going to go on record as saying he's the best player in the NBA right now, Mike.
I mean, he was unbelievable.
The fact that he got them to a game 7. I mean, and to be fair, Harden didn't play terrible that last, I don't think he played terrible in the last game. I think Harden played pretty well. You know, he got to the line a lot.
You look what he contributed decently, but he didn't contribute the way James Harden would contribute.
He was
20% of James Harden, which still means he was probably their second best player, but he was not giving you anything near where what you expect.
And then it came out that he had a second degree strain, which was not what they were calling it. And the fact that he once again played on a second degree strain, I'm going to give him credit. And I know
I give him a ton of credit. Look, I don't like James Harden, and I still don't think he comes through in big spots and all the things that we've said repeatedly on this podcast. But if you've ever had a hamstring injury, and you know that you can go out there and just move the wrong way and suddenly it's tightening up on you and you can't move and whatever, I give him a ton of credit for even getting out there and trying to gut it out and playing in that series at all is a credit to him. And he got better in each one of those games. And was he perfect? No. Was he what you expect James Harden to be? No. Could he get to the basket explosively? No. But him being out there definitely helped the Nets to continue.
It helped Durant big time.
Yeah. If he wasn't out there, if you just took him completely off the floor, I think it, you know, I mean, as impossible of Durant's task was as they were constituted with Harden on the floor, if Harden's not there, I just think it, you know, it becomes
Here's my question, Mike. Are you willing to admit that if they were all healthy, if they're all healthy, there's no one that was going to beat them.
I'm not willing to say that, because I think what happens is that when you have three guys that are all capable of going off and scoring 40 or having big moments, that there's diminishing returns on those three guys playing together. And look, the rest of Brooklyn's roster is what it is. Our guy Joe Harris didn't shoot the ball well, and that's probably putting it pretty kindly. Joe had a really tough series, and you know, if he'd have made some more open shots, they'd probably win. But look, the Nets got one game where Jeff Green shot 7 for 8 from 3-point land. It's pretty good. And I just look. Would they have probably beaten Milwaukee? Were they probably the best team with those three guys out on the floor? Yes. But I do think that once you eliminated Kyrie and once Harden was clearly hobbled, you just decided you're riding Durant. Like Durant's not putting up 50-point games if Harden and Kyrie are out there. He's not. And I think that, look, it would be hard. But I think there's diminishing returns on the second great player and the third great player, especially when the best traits of all of those guys. Look, Harden's a great passer, but his best trait is still being able to put the ball in the basket and score. And so I think if you have three great scorers on your team, there's diminishing returns on the second guy and the third guy. And so would it have been a guarantee that they would have won? No. Would it have made it way more likely? Sure, especially the way Milwaukee played offensively. And Milwaukee's struggles offensively against Brooklyn's defense were a little bit surprising. And I thought they figured it out a little bit in game 6 and 7, some of the things that they had to do. And Durant was just incredible in those two games. I mean, he was absolutely his game 5 and his game 7 were unbelievable. And I've said it over and over again that every time he goes up to shoot, I expected to go in.
He was dead in overtime. He was dead. He was checked out.
Those guys were all dead. Look, I have never seen in at any level of the NBA playoffs, I have never seen a game where the players on both teams were visibly exhausted. I mean, that was before the game went to overtime. I mean, you could just see at every free throw, every dead ball, every time they zeroed in on somebody's face, guys are just taking deep breaths and they're sighing and they got their hands on their shorts and they're bent over and they looked exhausted, both teams. And look, the minutes. One of the things we criticized Coach Bud about over the last two playoffs is that Giannis was playing 34 minutes a game. And clearly he learned his lesson and said, hey, I got to ride my best players. Those guys got to be out there. And the product of that, when you have two teams that are going at each other as hard as those two teams were, was that guys were exhausted. And look, I when I look at the series and you think about PJ Tucker, and I think back to when the Bucks first acquired PJ Tucker, and I said, look, at some point I think PJ Tucker is going to play an important role for Milwaukee, because he'd been in big games. And you know, the question was he washed with what he was doing in Houston? And he was, you know, was he done? And he proved he wasn't done. And yet, like, there's this case where you look and, okay, Durant had whatever, you know, Durant had 48 in game seven, and PJ Tucker had 3. And yet we're saying PJ Tucker did a great job. And look, when Durant raises up to shoot, I mean, PJ Tucker's hand, even when his hand is up, is like at Durant's chest at best. So it's not like he's affecting his shot in that way. But what I will say is that Durant had to work for every inch of space that he got against PJ Tucker, and PJ Tucker was bumping him and physical with him. And did he stop him? No, not by any means. But maybe that last bump or that last little bit of effort that Durant had to exert to get point 46 is what made him tired enough in overtime not to be able to finish, get that shot blocked by Brook Lopez. And then the shot that he made at the end of regulation was basically a carbon copy of the shot that he missed at the end of overtime. But he just didn't have the juice anymore. He was wiped out. And again, it wasn't just him. It's not like you're like, oh, Durant, he was out of shape, he couldn't do it. It was just every guy on that floor was exhausted. And Durant had played whatever, he had played 48 minutes in game five. And I forget what he played, you know, he played 46 minutes or whatever in game six. So rightfully so exhausted, but that was a great game seven. It wasn't super well played necessarily, but it had so much drama. And because both teams were playing so hard, it was a fun yep. game to watch. It was a fun game to watch.
Yep. I guess we talk briefly about Milwaukee here. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, Jrue Holiday better wake up, because he's looking very much like Eric Bledsoe. He's the pandemic P of this.
Except he came up with two big, huge shots.
Yeah, he did. He did have two big, huge shots. He did come up.
That's the only thing I'll say. Jrue was terrible. He was terrible offensively that whole game seven. I mean, he was absolutely terrible. Couldn't hit anything. And then big moments in the last 4 minutes of that game. He hit the three, and then he hit that corner baseline jumper.
Yep.
That were huge shots when they needed him. And look, he was bad. I mean, he was as bad in that game shooting the ball as Bledsoe ever was. Yep. But the hope is still that I think he's a better player. I still think that he's way better than his whatever he ended up 4-for-19. And I expect him to play really well against Atlanta, but we'll see.
Yep.
He hasn't been great. He hasn't been as good as you would have expected him to be in either of these first two series. And against the Nets, he was way below average for what you'd expect from him.
Yep. I agree. Anything else on the Bucks, Mike?
I think I'm gonna go with Skip Bayless here. I think that Middleton really is the guy that kind of drives what Milwaukee does, because
yep.
Middleton bails him out a lot in late shot clock moments, and he's got that little dribble drive and the turnaround and the one dribble pull ups, and he's kind of the guy who can score from the mid range for Milwaukee. And when he's hitting those shots, Milwaukee's really, really tough to beat. And he's an interesting guy to watch, because sometimes you feel like, oh, he's got it going and he's banging home shots, and then other times he's getting the same exact shots and they just don't drop. I do think that, you know, when you think about Giannis and you think about the things that we've questioned him about, that we've criticized him about, and his ability to score in isolation in big moments in late games, I still think that's a part of his game that if you break it all down, it's probably still the weakest part of what he does, is just him isolating in the half court situation and trying to score. But I will say that in game six and game seven, he was able to just kind of get the ball. And when he was catching it, one of the things they did was they started to get him to catch the ball a little bit deeper. So he'd catch it at about 15 feet maybe and then square up and then kind of attack Blake Griffin. Mostly he was on the left side of the floor. And it seemed like almost every time he was able to get the shot that he wanted. And then he had that huge jump hook, which I think was in, I think that was in overtime. It was maybe the second to last basket that the Bucks got, that he kind of backed Durant down and did that little right-handed hook over the top of him, and it rolled around the back of the rim and went in. And it was a huge basket. And then the thing that I think impressed me the most about him is he had the, did he shoot two air balls in game seven? I know he shot at least one, but I think he shot two, maybe like in his first or second free throw, and then he had one then he had one a little later. But anyway, he shot at least one air ball, and obviously everybody's counting and doing all that stuff. And then to bounce back from that and be able to make, I think he made seven out of his last eight, and he just kept going and attacking the basket, which you look at the difference between him and Ben Simmons, and it'd be easy for it to be getting in Giannis's head and him saying, hey, I'm not going to attack the basket, and I'm not going to shoot it because I don't want to go to the line. And he kind of went the opposite direction, and to step up and make some of the free throws that he made showed me a mental toughness that I wasn't necessarily sure was in there. I mean, I know he's a tough guy, but coming through in big moments has been something that it's been a struggle for him. It's been a struggle for Milwaukee, and for them to get through that, I think bodes well for their ability to compete and win a title this year moving forward.
Okay, fair. So I guess I'm guessing you're staying with Milwaukee, right? You're riding Milwaukee all the way into the sunset.
Yeah, I mean, I think Milwaukee, I don't want to say they easily beat the Hawks, but I think that you have it's a little bit different when you start talking about, I guess it would have been different if Kyrie was there, but I think when you look at the matchups here, they're probably going to put Giroux's going to go on Trey, I would think.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a tough matchup for Trae Young. Now, that's not to say, again, that Trae Young is going to get shut down, but you're going to have a guy with size, a guy who's physical, a guy who's going to make life at least difficult for Trae to do what he does. You have Lopez on the inside, which you look at trying to have Capella and the lobs and all that kind of thing, and then Middleton. I don't know. I think the Bucks are going to have an easier time offensively than they did against Brooklyn. I think Giannis is going to have an opportunity. I'm not sure who Atlanta puts on him, if they put Collins or they put Capella on him. And maybe it ends up being a lot of Capella, simply because John Collins can maybe go on Lopez, who's going to float around more outside on the 3-point line. I don't know, but I think Milwaukee has answers for what Atlanta is going to try to do. And I just think Milwaukee is the better team. And I'm going to say Milwaukee in five in this series.
Yeah. Listen, I picked the Knicks. I picked the Sixers. I'm going to pick the Hawks, Mike.
All right. Go for it.
I'm going to pick the Hawks in six.
All right. All right.
And I already said I'm going to pick Phoenix, so we're going to have Phoenix and the Hawks. So that's where I'm going. Okay, so here's my question. Let's rank the matchups really quickly. What matchups? So there's four possible matchups. We can have Clippers-Hawks, Clippers-Bucks. We can have Phoenix Bucks or Phoenix Hawks. Which one is the one that the league does not want the most? It's got to be Phoenix Milwaukee, right?
It's tough because I mean.
Well, I'm thinking ratings, Mike.
I know. No, but here's what I'm saying is the Clippers. Like, I have no idea. I know LA is by far the biggest market of these four, clearly. But how much of that LA market is Lakers fans and, if anything, anti-Clippers fans? I don't know the answer to that. Is the Clippers fan base and the LA market bigger than these other ones?
I'm saying Phoenix, yes.
I think it probably is too. Right. I agree.
And Atlanta fan base is bigger than Milwaukee.
Yeah, Atlanta, although Atlanta's fan base has kind of come and gone, but I think they're excited about the Hawks team this year.
That's the least. Milwaukee, Phoenix is the least desirable for the league. Okay, because
No. I think they'd rather see Milwaukee in there. I think you'd rather see Giannis in there if you're the league than see the Hawks. I don't think Trae Young and the Hawks are a bigger draw in the finals than Giannis trying to win his first title after having won two MVPs. Okay. I think Atlanta Phoenix is the least desirable for the league.
Okay. I disagree. I think Milwaukee. I think the ratings, I think that's the finals we're going to get. I know I picked Atlanta. I think Milwaukee's probably, but I'm being contrarian and picking Atlanta because I picked against them twice already. I think it'll be the lowest rated finals if it's in years, if it's Phoenix, Milwaukee. I'm telling you, I truly believe that.
Yeah, I mean, Devin Booker's probably not yet quite a known commodity for the bandwagon NBA fan. Phoenix, that, like, this team's brand new in terms of, this is the first year they've been in the playoffs, so they haven't built up necessarily that national, you know, that national following. Booker's never been on a big stage. I guess Chris Paul has fans. The Clippers team, are there really any Clippers fans outside of Los Angeles? I mean, is there anybody who's like, oh, I'm a huge Clippers fan?
I'm like, come on now. You're seriously saying, come on. LA's going to, they're going to, listen, the LA market would be way bigger. Because even if they're Laker fans, they're going to tune in and watch the game because they want to see the Clippers.
No, I agree. Look, I agree. The league would like to see LA from a rating standpoint. I agree. But I guess my point is that it's not like the Clippers have fans in every city. I doubt it's very often that the Clippers on the road that a ton of people are showing up in Clippers jerseys.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? I guess that's my question. So I'm agreeing with you that whatever.
Are you going to see more stars and people going to the Clippers in the finals, or more stars going to the Phoenix team in the finals?
No, I agree. You're going to see more stars at a Clippers game.
Are you going to see more stars at an Atlanta Hawks game? Or are you going to see more stars at a Milwaukee Bucks game?
You probably see more at an Atlanta game. Atlanta Clippers is the most desirable finals?
I mean, from a market and ratings perspective, I truly believe that. I don't think that's the best finals game.
I still think Milwaukee would have
Giannis shooting free throws?
I guess. Yeah. Hey, they want to count.
Two,
they
wanna, three, they
wanna,
four,
they
want to
count it down. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit biased just because I like the Bucks. I think the finals that I'd like to see, I'd like to see Phoenix and Milwaukee. The Clippers, look, if Kawhi was 100%, maybe. But I don't know. I don't see the Clippers in the finals, especially since they're down 2-0. So give me Milwaukee and Phoenix, and I think that'd be a really good series. I think Phoenix has a really good team. I think it'd make for some interesting matchups, and I think that would be a fun competitive series. I could see it going either way.
Okay. I'm going Phoenix and the Hawks, but I'm probably thinking that the Milwaukee Bucks are getting there, but I'm just picking the Hawks. I've picked against them twice, so that's where I'm going.
All right, there you go. Trying to keep the Atlanta fan base happy.
Yeah. Our few listeners in there. Yeah.
There you go. All right.
All right. Mike, is there anything else? I mean, we didn't even touch on lots of other things, but I feel like it's already, you know, 1:30 a.m. We don't need to talk about the Olympics yet. We've got a month to talk about the Olympics. I think we can wait to do that. And listen, the only thing I want to say is Kevin Love on the Olympic roster. I want your 1 minute. You have 1 minute, Mike, to say what you feel about Kevin Love being on the Olympic roster. Ready?
Go. Okay. I'm going to say it from a couple different perspectives. I don't really understand why Kevin Love would be on the U.S. Olympic roster. I don't understand why the U.S. Olympic team would want Kevin Love. I mean, the guy really hasn't played much basketball for the last three seasons. He hasn't been healthy when he has been playing. And I just don't know at this point. I know he's played with Team USA before, which gives him a little bit of an in. But you can't tell me that there isn't 11 or 12 other better players at this point of his career than Kevin Love. I don't understand why he's on the team from the Olympic team's perspective. And then from Kevin Love's perspective, I guess you're going to play saying, hey, I'm getting my money from the Cavs no matter whether I'm healthy or whether I'm injured or whatever it might be. Maybe he has some friends that he has on what the prospective Olympic roster that he'd like to play with. And maybe it becomes a showcase for him to be able to be traded at some point by the Cavs, either before this season or in the middle of the season at the trade deadline. I'm not really sure why Kevin Love necessarily wants to play. I mean, I guess, again, if you can win a gold medal and they want you on the roster, I mean, he's going to get paid regardless of whether he stays healthy or doesn't stay healthy. But I really don't understand at this point what value he's bringing to the Olympic team. I mean, I got to believe there are 11
players. That was more than a minute. I let you go.
I know. I'm sorry.
I shouldn't ask the question. Anyways, we'll break down the Olympic roster when we have less to talk about on the NBA front, which will be in a week or two when we're down to two teams, I think,
And there'll probably be six more coaches fired, and we'll have to talk about all that.
Yeah, for sure.
Coaching changes and coaching hires. So maybe Becky Hammon will be the coach of the Portland Trailblazers by then. Then we'll really have something to talk about.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Mike, that you want to say?
No, I think we're done. Looking forward to game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tomorrow night. See what this Milwaukee and Atlanta matchup looks like when you put it out on the floor, when those two teams really go at it. We'll see.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for staying up. We appreciate you listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.